This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
So the siege started 2 hours later until the whole of night yesterday. But today morning, that's when the state president, Lazarus Chakwera, announced that the plane has been found.
That was reporter Lamek Masina in Lingongwe speaking about the plane crash that killed Malawi's vice president. Details coming up. Also, medical workers in Malawi's public health facilities started a nationwide strike on Monday. And political uncertainty is causing South Africa's currency and shares in its companies to lose value. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight.
It is important that we comfort each other now and in the weeks to come as we mourn together. Dr. Saul's Klaus Chilima was a good man, a devoted father and husband, a patriotic citizen who served his country with distinction, and a formidable vice president. I consider it one of the greatest honors of my life to have had him as my deputy and counselor for the past 4 years. And his passing is a terrible loss to his wife, Mary, his family, his friends, his colleagues in the cabinet, and to all of us as a nation that found his leadership and courage a source of inspiration.
That was Malawi's President Lazarus Chakwera speaking to the nation today as he confirmed that Vice President Saulos Chilima was killed in a plane crash in bad weather. Hundreds of soldiers, police officers, and forest rangers began searching after the plane went missing Monday morning while making the 45-minute flight from the southern African nation's capital, Lilongwe, to the city of Mzuzu, around 370 kilometers away. For more on Vice President Chilima's death, I spoke a short time ago with journalist Lamek Masina in Lilongwe. I first asked him to update us on what is known about the crash.
The plane which the vice president, Saulos Chilima, boarded, disappeared yesterday, on Monday. This was in northern Malawi, where he went to attend a funeral of the former cabinet minister. But it failed to land because of weather conditions. But so when it was returning back, that's when the aviation officials said it was not showing on the ladder. And so it couldn't be traced. So the search started 2 hours later until the whole of night yesterday. But today morning, that's when the state president, Lazarus Chakwera, announced that the plane has been found. And it was found in a hill in northern Malawi, in a forest, in fact, near a hill. And it crashed. All the passengers were killed because of the impact, according to the president.
Okay, Lamek, how many people were in the plane?
The plane carried 10 people, including the vice president. But all these people were the members of the opposition, United Transformation Movement Party. It's the party which is led by the vice president.
And also, Lamek, the former first lady, Shanil Zimbiri, the ex-wife of former President Bakili Muluzi, was also on the plane.
Yes. He was on the plane. And why he was on the plane is because she is a member of Chilima's party, the UTM. So as I have already stated, they accompanied their president, their party's president to the funeral.
Now that you have mentioned the Chilima's United Transformation Movement political party, The party is actually criticizing the government response as slow and said there was no transponder on the plane. And that was concerning for an aircraft carrying a high-level delegation.
Yes, it was concerning indeed. But the issue is because the same aircraft is the one which carried the cabinet minister who was dead. It was hours before. It was the star. Now we don't know if even at that time it didn't have the transponder. We don't know. And the state president, even the state president Lazarus Chakwera, has said he has been using the same aircraft in the past.
And Lameka, who is Saulos Chilima? Tell us a little about the vice president.
Saulos Chilima, according to official information, was born in 1973. He was first sworn in as the vice president of the Republic of Malawi in 2014. And later, that was the time when he was the country was led by the late by Peter Mutharika. And also in 2020, he became the president now when he joined in a coalition with the current vice president, Lazarus Chakwera.
And you are there. I need to know about the reaction of this tragedy on the country, both among ordinary people and also among the leadership. Talk to us a little about that.
The tragedy has come as a shock. It's something which Malawians were not expecting to happen in this way. In the videos posted in social media, many were literally crying when they heard about the news. And also, even the state president today, when he was delivering the announcement that the plane has found and all the passengers there have been killed, he was wiping tears. It's a sombre mood here in Malawi, and there's a shock all over the country.
That was reporter Lamek Masina speaking with me by phone from Lilongwe. As you heard, people in Malawi are coming to terms with the death of Vice President Chilima. Reporter Chimwemwa Padata spoke today with residents in the capital, Lilongwe. Malumbo Aguira says he had hoped the plane's passengers would have survived.
So everyone, I think he's saddened with the news, and probably everyone was looking forward to see him arrive. And the eight others, everyone would have loved to see them alive.
And Yona Zambeni says he is grieving over the vice president's death.
I feel very bad. Even here I'm speaking, I feel very bad.
You can go to voaafrica.com to get the latest developments on the death of Malawi's Vice President, Saulos Chilima. Uncertainty about South Africa's future is causing the country's currency and shares in its companies to lose value as political parties negotiate to form a government. The African National Congress lost its majority after a recent election and needs support from opposition parties to establish a new administration, Darren Taylor reports.
The African National Congress, or ANC, proposes that all 10 parties in parliament, ranging from far right to hard left organizations, form a government of national unity. But uniting groups with vastly different philosophies is proving difficult. Mesh Pillay is a financial expert whose firm gives advice about investing in the continent's most industrialized economy.
We're talking to some of the sovereign funds out of the Middle East, the pension funds in South Africa and globally, and then the high net worth and family offices globally. I think they all want the same thing. They want a stable government. And that's the challenge right now, is we don't know where we're going to go over the next few days.
South Africa's second biggest party, the Centrist Democratic Alliance, the DA, is built around conservative capitalist policies, geared toward allowing the private sector to flourish. The DA stands in contrast to the other major opposition parties the ANC has invited to help it govern. The Economic Freedom Fighters, the EFF, and Umkhonto we Sizwe, MK, want the state and not private companies and individuals to control wealth, including mines, land, and banks. They say profits from these assets should be given to the millions of poor people in South Africa. Pillay says international business people are more at ease with the DA's economic policies than they are with MK and EFF's philosophies.
They want a government that's market-friendly. They want a government that fights corruption. They want a government that upholds the legal frameworks in this country as well as the financial frameworks and businesses in this country. And if we can get that, I think the international community will be very comfortable with putting further capital in the country. But at the moment, the reality is there's a lot of capital waiting on the sidelines, watching South Africa very closely and determining whether or not this is the right investment to make.
South Africa is a major exporter of gold, coal, diamonds, agricultural products, and automobiles. Several large international banks, mining companies, and others base their African operations in the country. Since the election on May 29, the rand has slipped to about 18.8 to the US dollar, from around 18.1 before the vote. Today, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange All Shares Index began trading down nearly 1%, dipping below 76,000 points. It's down almost 5% from its peak this year at just over 80,000 points on May 20. Some international financial agencies say South Africa's ability to borrow could be harmed should MK and the EFF join the government. They say investors won't put money into a country where the state might seize their property. Fitch Ratings, for example, says the country's debt burden is likely to increase. Economic growth will weaken and governance could erode if the ANC signs an agreement with those parties. African politics expert at the University of London, Adam Habib, says the success of the new government depends largely on the DA.
There are huge challenges with the DA. I don't think it's been responsive to the interests of the black middle classes, and it isn't very nuanced on the racialized politics of our history. Having said that, it is the most appropriate partner for growth, stability, poverty alleviation, and jobs.
The parties involved in coalition talks haven't got much time to argue. Markets are losing money, and Parliament opens Friday. Lawmakers are supposed to elect a president, setting the Rainbow Nation on a fresh journey, with destination unknown. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. U.S. presidential candidate Donald Trump is back on the campaign trail following his convictions in New York for falsifying business records. At rallies in the western United States, Trump focused on immigration and threatened to sanction countries, including China, if they do not stop people from leaving for the United States. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has the story.
Donald Trump returned to the presidential campaign trail last week in Arizona, where he said President Joe Biden has lost control of the U.S.-Mexican border.
It's all unsustainable. But the Biden invasion is no accident. It's a deliberate demolition of our sovereignty and of our borders. Somehow, somebody's going to explain to us why they would want this to happen. I guess it's probably votes.
There is no evidence that non-citizens are voting in significant numbers in U.S. elections. Trump was asked how he'll stop illegal migration and said he'll act against foreign governments that feed it.
if China or some other country is behaving badly, we have things called tariffs that are so severe.
The Biden administration this month moved to block asylum claims at the Mexican border when arrests for illegal crossings exceed 2,500 a day. Biden says necessary immigration reform need not come with the inflammatory remarks that Trump directs toward migrants.
While we fight for comprehensive immigration reform, he calls immigrants rapists and murderers. He says they are not people. They are not people. He says immigrants are, quote, poisoning the blood of our country. Folks, my predecessor wants a country just for some of us. We want a country for all of us.
Biden says Trump's anti-immigrant rhetoric is out of line with founding American principles.
We represent how we are as a nation of immigrants, nation of dreamers, nation of freedom. And that's the America we share.
Trump's rallies last week were his first since being convicted of falsifying business records to hide so-called hush money payments he made ahead of the 2016 election. He told a rally in Nevada that his trial was the result of Biden weaponizing the judicial system while failing at the border.
This is the worst border in the history of the world. There's never been. No third world country has a border like that. And no third, I tell you what, no third world country has weaponization where they go after political candidates like we have either.
Associated Press polling in March showed shifting voter attitudes on immigration, with nearly a third of Americans now saying it is a major risk that immigrants will commit crimes. That's up from 19% who thought that in 2017. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
In an historic case, the son of U.S. President Joe Biden has been convicted on felony charges related to the purchase of a handgun in 2018. Jurors in a Delaware state court found Hunter Biden guilty of lying to a federally licensed gun dealer, making a false claim on the application by saying he was not a drug user and illegally having the gun. His defense attorney argued that Hunter Biden did not believe he had a drug addiction at that time. The case is the first in which the son of a sitting U.S. president was charged and convicted of criminal offenses. It comes as President Biden is in the middle of an election campaign facing the presumptive Republican Party candidate, former President Donald Trump. Trump also faces legal problems and late last month was convicted in a New York state court on charges related to his payment of hush money to cover up an alleged extramarital affair. Trump has denied all wrongdoing in that matter and in three other criminal cases he faces. Under the U.S. Constitution, the conviction does not prevent Trump from running for president or even serving as president if elected. The younger Biden faces up to 25 years in prison on the case, but first-time offenders typically do not get the maximum sentence. And in our sports segment, the T20 Cricket World Cup is in its second week of play in stadiums across the Caribbean and the United States. Our VOA colleague Saqib Ul Islam has been covering the tournament, and earlier today he spoke with our sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro about the latest action.
We're talking T20 Cricket World Cup. It is underway and has been quite the exciting tournament. Can you tell our listeners about the atmosphere at the game, Saqib?
Yes, of course. T20 World Cup comes to America first time, and USA and West Indies, the Caribbean teams, are the co-hosts together. They're hosting this seventh edition of T20 World Cup, which started back in 2007. It happens every 2 years. And this year, of course, American fans witness the big giants of cricket playing the grounds. We have three grounds in the USA where these games are being played: New York, Dallas, Texas, and Fort Lauderdale, Florida, where all these games are taking place. USA made a very blasting entry into this World Cup of cricket, and they won their first game against Canada. And then what they did was unimaginable. They beat the former champion Pakistan in a tense game in Dallas, Texas, and that was it. And then that news made the headlines all through, all around the U.S. What I see here, all the stadiums, most of the games are sold out. The game in Dallas especially Pakistan versus USA, was sold out and it was just packed. For lots of people, that was their first ever game of cricket to watch in person.
The excitement definitely came after that second game that the U.S. won, beating Pakistan. Pakistan having an extensive history in the realm of cricket. My question to you is, the U.S. team will be going up against India on Wednesday. Both teams are undefeated. What are your predictions, Saqib?
Of course, USA team considered like as in the beginning when this tournament started, USA's team started as a minnow in front of these giants of cricket, India, Pakistan, Australia, England. But what they did with Pakistan has turned all the eyes and heads towards USA team because they are playing exceptional cricket. So tomorrow it will be a tough game. India, of course, you know, spirits high, they have won two games. But on the other side, USA team also have won two games. So if US holds their nerve and they, if they hold enough, they can win against India. So my prediction is game will be tough. India is hot favorite, but USA is underdog.
Lastly, what do you think it'll take for the game of cricket to continue to grow at the pace that has been growing in America?
In the United States, the cricket is not new. Of course, the expats here from cricket-playing nations, be it South Africa, Australia, England, Pakistan, India, they have been playing this game here in the local leagues. But on the international level, this is a huge step for cricket in America. I tell you, like back in 2016, we had an all-star cricket here in New York, which I covered back in 2016. And we had all the big names of cricket here playing from Pakistan, India, England, Australia, South Africa. Those are the top 5-6 teams. Who were all their big names were here, who were retired or current players. They played an all-star cricket in New York for three games, and that introduced the cricket at the international level. Then we had Sri Lanka versus New Zealand series in Florida, which also opened the doors for international cricket in the U.S. And now this World Cup is going to change what's coming. I think now people in America have, firsthand witness. They can see what's happening. They can see on the news. They can walk around and see what's happening around in their cities that this game is being played. And people from all around the globe and cricket-playing nations coming to the U.S. to watch cricket World Cup, that has given a lots of not only the information about cricket, but also the interest that peaked. I talked to a lot of fans from the USA who never heard the word cricket. They knew it's a cell phone company, but now they know that cricket is it's a sport, it's a game, and USA is a good team. So, of course, future of cricket in America looks so bright.
Thank you so much for your insights, Saqib. Have fun out there for us as you continue to cover the T20 Cricket World Cup.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure being there.
That was VOA Saqib Ul Islam, who was speaking with my colleague, Mokbil Yabaro. The International Criminal Court chief prosecutor today voiced serious concern about violence raging in Sudan's Darfur region, urging witnesses to send his office evidence to aid their investigation. El Fasher, capital of North Darfur state, has been seen fierce fighting since May 10th. The medical charity Doctors Without Borders says at least 192 have been killed and more than 1,200 wounded. The French news agency AFP says that in a statement, prosecutor Karim Kahan said evidence already collected seems to show credible, repeated, expanding, continuous allegations of attacks against the civilian population. Kahan said there was also evidence showing the widespread prevalent use of rape and other forms of sexual violence and attacks against hospitals. The prosecutor said, "It is an outrage that we are allowing history to repeat itself once again in Darfur," and added that we cannot and we must not allow Darfur to become the world's forgotten atrocity once again. War has raged for more than a year in Sudan between the regular military and the paramilitary rapid support forces. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Regas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.